Eric and Hannah Coons were with us about, we think, 7 years ago or something like that on a Sunday night service, and they had been in Honduras for 2 or 3 years, I think, and came back, and while on their time here, came and spoke at our church. And so we got to know them just a little bit, and my memory's not good, but I've learned a lot about them since this morning, being able to reacquaint with them. We're thankful for their ministry. We're thankful that God's called them, and look forward to the share. They have two boys, and the little one is sick today and not able to be with us, and I'm disappointed about that. I love to get kids in trouble with their parents and play with them, you know. But we welcome, would you please welcome Eric and Hannah Coons as they come and share.
Good morning. It's so good to be with you this morning, and thank you so much for allowing us to come and share with you what God's been doing in Honduras over the past 10 years. We serve a mighty and awesome God, and I have proved him to be true time and time and time again. I grew up in the country of Jordan. Any of you know where that's at? I'm sure a lot of you have heard it in the news lately, but I grew up there till I was 16 years old. My father was from over there, and he came to the United States where he met my mother, and they got married. 2 years later, I was born. We moved back to the country of Jordan where I grew up for 16 years. But ever since I was 5 years old, I've always known what I was going to do with my life. I was going to prove to all the Middle Eastern men that if they could do something, I could do it 10 times better than they could. And so in my mind, since I was 5 years old, I was going to be a very famous heart surgeon, make lots of money, travel the world, and drive a red Corvette convertible. And so where's the best place to study medicine? Of course, the United States. So when I was a junior in high school, my dad sent us back to the States to live with my grandparents and attend a Bible school in Ohio. And in my junior year, I was at a camp meeting, and during that camp meeting, the Lord said, "Hannah, would you be willing to be a missionary?" And I got up from that service, and I went to my cabin, and I started a year-long struggle between my will and God's will. Because being a missionary was just not part of the plan. And that was the most miserable year of my life. The next year, I was a senior in high school, and we had a revival service during school time. And in that revival service, the Lord just came and he said, "Hannah, you either give me your all or you will lose everything." And I'm so glad to tell you this morning, I said, "Lord, if you want me to go to the mission field tomorrow, I'll pack up my bags and leave." Obviously, he didn't send me to the mission field the very next day, but I thought to myself, you know, the devil likes to discourage us sometimes, and I hate the heat. I cannot stand the heat. And the devil came to me and said, "Hannah, you know the Lord's going to send you to the hottest country on the planet." I said, "Okay," but I was determined, and so I said, "I got to prepare myself for this." So I would get in my car, I would roll up the window, turn off the air conditioning during the summer to see how far I can go before suffocating. And the Lord said, "Yes, I need you to prepare, but that's not the way I want you to do it. I want you to go to Bible college." And that's when he led me to go to Penview, just 10 minutes away from here. And that's where I met Eric, and it's been an adventure ever since. I've been places I never thought I would go. I've met people never thought I would meet. And he's even allowed me to drive a red Corvette convertible one time. The Lord is faithful in everything that we do. If we would just say, "Lord, whatever you want me to do, I'm willing to do it," he's faithful to lead us every step of the way. Before coming home to go on deputation, I was getting prepared for deputation, and I saw a picture. And this picture was of a lamb dying in a river. He was struggling for his life, trying to get out of this raging river, and he couldn't do it. And along came this man, and he was trying to pull this little lamb out of the river, and he couldn't do it. And he was also struggling, and it was almost getting pulled into the river. And along came another man, and he held on to that man that was trying to save the lamb, and both of them together were able to pull that lamb out of that river. And the Lord spoke to me and he said, "Hannah, that's what people back home in the United States are doing for you. Churches like this church here praying for you every day. You cannot be on the front line doing what you're doing unless there are people back home praying for you every day." So thank you so much for allowing us to come and share it with you. And we serve an amazing God. This morning in the first service, one of the songs we were singing was about all nations are going to bow down to Jesus. And I had the awesome privilege a few months ago to go to Greece and work with some of the refugees. And a Muslim man came up to me and asked me how to become a Christian. I lived next door to them all my life. And all my life, I never had the opportunity or the privilege to tell people, Muslim people, how to get to heaven or how to know Jesus. And they're coming to us. They're asking us. We're living in the end times, and God is bringing the Muslim people to us. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to cower away and say, well, we don't want them here or whatever? Are we going to step up to the plate and say, Lord, help me to give the gospel to the needy? So again, thank you so much for your prayers and for allowing us to share with you.
It's so good to be with you again, and to see family, some friends, and to see my aunt and uncle, Paul and Barb Coons. To see them here as well. Thank you for allowing us to come and share what God is doing in our ministry there in Honduras. As was already mentioned, we have two little boys. They're not able to be with us this morning. Joseph is the oldest. He's 10 years old. Hard to believe. He's 10 already. And little Daniel is 5 years old, and he woke up this morning and just is not feeling good at all. So they're at home with Nana. So you pray for Daniel that he'll get to feel better. But we thank God for their lives. We have been working with Hope International Missions, a missions organization out of Florida. And been on the field for 10 years. And God has blessed. God has been working. And we thank the Lord for that. Honduras is a country of about 8 million people. It's right in Central America. There's two major cities in that country. The first is San Pedro Sula to the north. There's about 1 million people in that city. When we first signed up with HIM, we were considering, you know, where to go and begin our ministry. And we were looking at the cities through the crossroads of the country. And we felt those were the best places to target for the gospel. And San Pedro Sula already had nationals working with HIM. They had started a church there. And still going today. And so we put our sights on the capital city, Tegucigalpa, with another 1 million or so people in that city toward the south. And we landed there March 2006. We really didn't have connections. We really didn't know anybody there. We started off in a language school and got an apartment and started canvassing our community and telling people that we were there to start a church. Long story short, after many months of discouragement and battles and prayer and fasting, there was one Sunday when 14 people came to our living room to hear the gospel, and our very first church was started. That group began to invite their friends and their relatives, and one of the ladies told us about another community there in the city called Las Uvas. She said, Pastor, there's no church for the people there. I know a lot of the people. And I know they would love to have a church. Would you come and hold services on a piece of property that I own in Las Uvas? There's no building, there's no shelter, but I know people would come to listen. And sure enough, that very first service, nearly 50 people came out on the yard. We set up chairs and had a service right there. And every Saturday we met like that. And a second church was started in Las Uvas. She later donated another piece of property where we built a little one-room church building. And so we were pastoring these two churches. And we had a marriage seminar. And one of the men from Las Uvas invited his cousin Roberto to the seminar. Roberto needed God in his life. He was just miserable. He had run away from home at 17 years of age. Came to Tegucigalpa, was living in the streets, eating out of dumpsters. Finally got a job at a bank and got married, had two little girls. But their marriage was on the rocks, and they needed God desperately. So they came to the seminar. They got help. They started coming to church. And we got to know them better. And it wasn't long until he brought his dad with him. His dad came in from a little village called Las Delicias, about an hour and a half outside of the city. Very poor cow town, might say. And he came to visit the church. And after the message, he said, Pastor, he said, ever since my conversion 17 years ago, I got saved in a tent meeting. And he said, I've been praying for 17 long years that somebody would come and start a church in my village. Would you come? Could you help us? We were busy with two churches, and here was an offer for a third. I said, I don't know how much we can help, but we'll certainly try to do something. Well, we got out there and began to minister. People began to get saved. And Brother Jose donated some land, and we built an adobe church, the blue building that you see there. Next to it, we built a parsonage. And I tell you, it was exciting. This is the only church in that town. People were coming in from all around, getting saved. 3 years ago, we came home, and before we left, Roberto and Jenny, they both had given their hearts to Christ. They had been baptized, went through their discipleship classes, were serving in the church. God was transforming their lives. When we got back from our deputation 3 years ago, Roberto and Jenny were waiting for us. They wanted to tell us that God had been speaking to them. And they felt that the Lord was calling them to go to Las Delicias and pastor that church. And we had been praying for somebody to hear that call. They heard the call. He resigned his job there in the city. They packed up their few belongings and moved to the Las Delicias. And God has been blessing their ministry. I thank the Lord for that. And many of his family there in that town started coming to church and getting saved, like his oldest brother Tito and his family. Young people like Felipe there in the middle, giving their hearts to God. Matter of fact, when he first started working there in the church, he soon found out that there was a gang. There was a group of young people working in that town. And matter of fact, Felipe's oldest brother was the gang leader. And one day he took his gang out beyond the village, out where the dirt road crossed a dry creek bed. And those guys got in position hiding in the bushes. They had their machetes and weapons and things there. And they waited, and here came a delivery truck bringing produce to the little stores out along the road. And that truck slowed down across that creek, and those boys jumped out and got on the sides of the truck. And his brother, Felipe's brother, was on the passenger side. Had his machete raised, ready to break through the window and hold the men up inside the vehicle. And the guy inside the truck, looking out the window and seeing a man with a machete, he feared for his life, and he pulled out his gun and he shot through the window and shot him through the stomach. And he fell off the back of the truck and rolled across the ground. And when the boys heard the gunshot go off, everybody ran off the truck and ran into the bushes, ran for their lives. And they left Felipe's brother bleed to death on the road. And we had his funeral there in the church. Talk about a sad, sad day to watch a community go past the casket of a 28-year-old man and say goodbye. The whole community was shook up. Here were some of their own teens involved in this. And one by one, many of them started seeking God and giving their hearts to the Lord and saying, I'm done with this kind of life. Had I been shot, had I been killed, they knew, many of them knew, they would have gone straight to hell. And they started seeking the Lord and getting their lives right with God. And Felipe was one of them. And now he's serving God, playing his guitar, leading the singing in the church, and just helping Roberto in any way he can in that community, just a block down the road. Roberto's uncle has a little convenience store. His uncle's not a Christian, doesn't come to church. And his uncle decided that he's going to make a few extra bucks, and he was going to add alcohol to his produce and sell some of that. And so he started selling beer and things, and guys would come around from different villages, and they would get drunk in front of his store. And then they would stumble down the street and come into the church in the middle of service. They would be loud and boisterous and interrupt the service, and this had happened repeatedly. And Roberto was getting so frustrated about it. And he called his church together. He said, we got to do something about this. We can't even have church. We're constantly being interrupted. And the people started talking. And they said, you know what? The problem is your uncle. He started selling beer in his store. And that's why these guys are coming here now. That's why we have this problem. He said, well, we got to do something. They said, you know what you need to do? You need to report him to the police. He doesn't have a permit to sell that. And that would just solve this whole problem. He said, no, I can't do that. He's my uncle. If he heard that I reported him to the police, that would start a family feud. And he would never come to church and get saved. No, he said, the only thing I know to do is as a church, we fast and pray that God takes care of this problem. That church hit their knees. They started praying and fasting for about 2 weeks. And then here came a man to the store and got drunk. He was laying there in front of the store, and the man's wife found him at the store. She was upset. She got a hold of Roberto's uncle. Why in the world are you selling this stuff? Look what it's doing to our men. They've got families to take care of. Look how he's wasting his life and wasting our money. She was so upset, she called the police. So patrol's on its way to the store. Roberto's uncle's out back getting rid of bottles and dumping things down the drain. And the police roll in. And they said, all right, we're going to warn you this time. Next time it's prison, but this time it's a warning. You're not allowed to sell this. And you know that church literally prayed out alcohol sales right out of that store? Isn't that amazing? God still answers prayer. Do you believe that? God is still on the throne and answers prayer. Roberto had to call. He was so excited how God had answered their prayers and had been helping in the ministry there in Las Delicias. Now, on to Las Uvas. God is working there in that ministry as well. You can see our little building that we have, one room, not very much space to have Sunday school classes. One of Hannah's ministries is working with children. She has classes with them and teaching them. And she wanted to start a class with the kids in Las Uvas, but there wasn't any room for one. Until some young people came down and built that wooden structure that you see there. And that's on the upper end of our church lot. And that's become our Sunday school room. So Hannah started having classes there, and the kids, I tell you, they were excited. The word spread like wildfire. We're having Sunday school, and there's prizes, and there's fun things, and kids started showing up. Some of the kids that came was this group right here. They got saved and started coming to church faithfully. Now, they don't look like it in that picture, but I tell you, that's a very, very poor family. That entire family lives in a shack about 12 foot by 12 foot. And I'll pull up with the church van on Sunday afternoons, and those girls will come out with their Bibles under their arms, dressed in their Sunday best, excited to go to church. Their mother, Norma, started coming. She got saved. And they would all file into the van. And I'd look up behind the little house, and there would be their daddy, Pablo, swinging away in a hammock. And he'd have a cigarette in one hand and a beer in the other hand. He was proud to death that his family was going to church. But he wasn't interested. He wasn't going. That was for girls and for little boys and kids, not for men. And those kids started praying for Pablo. And he started watching their lives and his wife and how things were different. And there was a peace and there was love and there was something in their hearts that he wanted. He was so sick and tired of the way he was living. Finally, he started coming to church. He kind of hit and miss. And would listen, you know, and it wasn't long. He got under heavy conviction. And he came to the altar after a message and started weeping and praying his way to victory. Surrendered his life to God. And I tell you, almost overnight, it was just a short time, this smoking stopped, the drinking stopped, the carousing around, that lifestyle came to a screeching halt. Everybody in that village was amazed. They couldn't believe it was the same Pablo. I mean, this guy's on fire for God. He's out knocking on doors, inviting new people to church, and God is using them. And his wife, Norma, she's a timid lady. She doesn't speak a whole lot in public, but she couldn't help to stand and testify. She said, I want to thank God for the change in Pablo's life. She said, before, when he would get drunk, he would come home and he would beat me and throw me around the house. But she said, you know, since Jesus came into his heart and life, he doesn't beat me anymore. Isn't that wonderful? Thank God for the change in their home. And they have just been serving the Lord together and growing in grace. Another one of Hannah's ministries is that she works with our ladies. Many of our women are single mothers. Some are married to alcoholic husbands. And they need all the encouragement that they can get. And Hannah's been there for them, not just as a pastor's wife, but as a friend. And she'll often have meetings in our home. The ladies will come and they'll have refreshments together and fellowship. And she'll talk to them about the Lord. And she said one time, she said, you know, I'd really like to have a ladies' retreat. We didn't have the funds to do that, but we got an invitation to go to one. Another organization invited us to their women's retreat. And she decided to go and took about seven or so ladies with her. It was a 5-hour drive up into the mountains, up into a place called San Luis. And they got up into the mountains and they realized that it had been raining up there for about 2 weeks. And the dirt roads were solid mud. And they got to an incline. They had to climb this hill, and the tires began to spin and mud's flying everywhere, and they couldn't make it up the hill. And there was no houses around, nobody that could come and help or push or anything like that. And they were getting nervous. It was getting dark. She called me on her cell phone. She said, "We're stuck. I don't know what to do. I can't make it up this hill." I said, "Well, I could call the missionary. It's another hour down the road, but he can at least come and help, you know, pull you out and get you up the hill." She said, "Well, we're going to try one more time. You pray, and we're going to pray." I hung up the phone. I started praying. I'm 4 hours away. There's nothing I could do. She hung up the phone, and she got the group of ladies together, and I mean, they started praying for their lives. "Lord, you've got to get us out of here. There's nobody around. It's getting dark. We're stuck out here. Please help us to make it to the retreat." They stopped praying, and Hannah put the pedal down, and tires began to spin, and mud began to fly. And you know, those ladies declare that they could feel an angel pick up and move the back of the car, and got moved to where they could get the traction, and they made it safely on up that hill and arrived to the retreat. And they came home, and they couldn't stop talking about that night in the mountains when God answered their prayer. You know, that's the God we serve. That's the God we serve. And it doesn't matter what kind of jam your life is in, God can help you get out of it if we'll pray and give our hearts to Him. They were so excited. The next year we had our own ladies' retreat. Our four churches came together. You can see the group there. They had a wonderful time of fellowship together, and God has been blessing there tremendously. Our newest ministry started last March in the penitentiary. We had some men from Las Delicias get in trouble, and they got sent to the prison there. And I wanted to go in and visit. But I'll tell you, I was scared to death to go to the penitentiary. I'd never been in there. Honduras is a dangerous, dangerous country. We have all kinds of street gangs like MS-13, Gang 18. They're vicious gangs that kill each other. They fight for territory and control of drug routes. And I knew the penitentiary was filled with murderers and extortionists and, you know, all kinds of guys. And I wasn't sure how safe it was to go, but I went in with fear and trembling and praying. I got in there, and it's one of the safest places you can ever visit. It actually operates like a gang in there. You can see the dormitories that these guys stay in the zone that I go to. And each wing off of these dormitories has what they call a boss. And he's over about 30, 40 guys in those wings. And whatever the boss demands, those guys have to meet those demands. If not, they get beat, they lose privileges, and so forth. And one of the unwritten rules is that nobody can touch a visitor. If you mess with the visitor, you will be dealt with, and it'll be a harsh dealing. You walk in there, nobody touches you. Everyone's friendly, you know. They know what would happen if something went down. A stone's throw from that dormitory, I discovered a little church in there where converted prisoners were meeting for services. They heard about me being a missionary, and they invited me to come preach. It was awesome to be able to go in and stand before 100 guys and preach the gospel and see 15, 20 come praying and crying and seeking God. And afterwards they said, "We want Bible studies. Can you come and train us and teach us?" We started having Bible studies with them. And it's just been so encouraging. I've been able to meet Americans who are in prison. Incredible stories. But to be able to witness to them, talk to them about God, try to be an encouragement to them. This is a great ministry, a great opportunity, and we ask that you just pray that the Lord continues to work in the ministry there in the penitentiary. We're excited about some brand new missionaries coming to help us. Wesley and his wife Jana and little Ella Cressman have felt God calling them to come and work with us. They came to visit a few years ago, came back with a burden on their heart. And they've done their deputation. They're in language school in Texas studying Spanish. In February of next year, they'll be commissioned to come and work with us as a team ministry. And their focus is going to be education, helping us train people who are illiterate, helping us start a Christian day school, working with us to train leaders and pastors. All the education will be their focus, and pray for them. They need God's help. Pablo is another young man from our church who has felt God calling him to be a missionary. Matter of fact, he went to a training school in Nicaragua for 2 years, just graduated last December, and feels a burden for Muslims. Isn't that exciting? And is wanting to go to a Muslim-controlled country to be a missionary, and God is leading every step and guiding his life. Pray for him and for these new workers as they come and minister to our people. Pray for our protection. We are in a very, very serious situation in Honduras. It's getting very dangerous. And we see scenes like this almost weekly. The orange building that you see there is one of our favorite Honduran restaurants. It's right in front of the airport. And we had plans of taking one of our missions leaders who'd come to visit. We thought of taking him out for supper there one night. And it's kind of a grilled meat, refried beans and rice kind of store, you know. But for lunch that day, we had almost the same kind of food. So we thought, well, we'll do something different. We went to another restaurant just a block down the road to a pizza shop. While we were eating our pizza, our men showed up at this restaurant, shot the guard who was standing at the door. They threw the doors open. They yelled, "Where's our money?" And they looked over, and the man that was running the grill that night, they shot and killed him and ran out the door. Here the gangs had been asking for money from the store, and the restaurant had been refusing to pay. And they came to collect that night. We would have been in that restaurant during that shooting. But God moved us a block down the road, kept his hand upon our family. Thank the Lord for that. You can see the end of our car has a bullet hole through the trunk. Came out one Sunday morning getting ready for church. Looked at our car and there was a big bullet hole. I have no idea who or why or how. But thank God for his protection once again. The other picture you see is at the end of the dirt road in Las Uvas. And usually after the services in Las Uvas, I take people home in our church van. And at the end of that road is an entrance to a big cemetery. You can see the entrance to the cemetery there in the back of the picture. One night, about 9 o'clock at night, I came back to the end there of the road and turned around in front of the house where our church people were getting out of the van. I turned around and headed back out. And there's nobody back there with vehicles. So it was strange when all of a sudden in my mirror, car lights turn on. And a car comes flying out from the cemetery area and gets behind our van, right on the bumper of our van. I got a little nervous. I thought, this is something's odd here. I pulled off to the side of the road hoping this guy would get by. And he went flying past, and I kind of breathed a sigh of relief and turned the van back on the road, but didn't realize a second car was coming behind the first. No lights on. And I turned on, and here was a car right next to our van. I almost ran right into him as he goes flying past on the tail of the first car. I thought, you know, this is really strange. What in the world's going on? The next day, found out in the news that they had just executed two young men in front of the cemetery. And put a bullet through each of their heads. And here these guys were getting away from the crime scene when I nearly hit them as they were going past. Had I hit those guys, I probably would have been on their kill list that night as an eyewitness. Thank God it didn't happen. And he's just been with us time and time again. Two Decembers ago, Roberto, Jenny, their two little girls, myself, we were in our van headed to Guatemala City. Every year we have a pastor's retreat in Guatemala. Pastors come from Mexico, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala. We meet there for several days. We were headed to the retreat. We were about 45 minutes away, going through a mountain pass, just happily going down the road, when I look out my window, and right next to our van is a police truck. Four police officers standing in the back of the truck with 9mm handguns pointed at our window, waving for us and slamming the side of our van, telling us to pull off and stop. I stopped the van, and those four guys jumped out, and in seconds, they were inside our van. Two came in the sliding door and sat in the back. Two came in the driver's doors, and they're waving guns, telling us to get in the back, and I'm crawling over the seat. It's all chaos, you know, and I'm yelling. I'm saying, "Guys," I said, "don't kill us. We're pastors. There's two little girls here in the van. Don't shoot. Don't shoot." People had told me before that guys in the gang, corrupt individuals like that, there was a certain fear of Christians They were afraid to kill and hurt Christians because they were afraid of God's wrath and vengeance. I wanted to put all the fear of God I could in those guys. Hey, I said, we're Christians, don't shoot. He ran me with his elbow and he said, get out of the chair. And I crawled over the back and sat in the front bench with the rest of the family. And those guys took control of the van and we pulled out and he started down the opposite side of the highway, squealing the wheels as we were going around the curves. And I started praying out loud. I said, dear Jesus, please send your angels right now. Don't let these men kill us. The man in the passenger seat looks back at me and he says, shut up. Put your head down. Stop talking. I put my head down. And the driver looks up in the mirror and at us and he said, don't worry, guys. He said, we're police officers. And we got a call when you crossed the Honduran-Guatemala border that you were carrying drugs in this van and we won't inspect it. Just do everything we tell you to do. We're flying down the road, and the other man gets on his cell phone. He starts looking in the mirror as a car pulls in behind our van. He said, flick your lights. I think I see you back. And they start flicking their lights. A car pulls in front. They're communicating with the other drivers, making sure everybody was in place. And then the driver starts slowing down. And the two in front, I can hear them whispering and looking out the side of the window, saying, I think it's around here somewhere. And finally, they spotted a dirt road that cut off of the highway and up into the woods. And he jerked the van off and we went flying down across a little ditch and he plowed over a little picket fence at the end of the road and we went up into the woods and he parked in the woods on a hill. The two guys in the back open the sliding door and they get out with their guns and they start guarding. As the two drivers come around, they look in at us. We're sitting there, we're just waiting. And they said, all right, you're going to get out one by one. You're going to empty everything in your pockets, put it on the floor of the van. And sit down at the edge of the road and put your head between your knees and do not look at us. And we want you to get out first. And they pointed at me. I was all the way in at the window. I crawled over everybody and got out first and started emptying my pockets and taking off my watch and cell phone. And as I'm doing all of this, I'm pleading. I said, guys, please don't kill us. I said, I got two little boys back in Honduras. He's got two girls sitting here in this van. I said, we're pastors. We're on our way to a pastor's retreat. You can take this van. You can take all of our money. You can take whatever. Just please spare our lives. They didn't say much. Just kind of waited for me to finish emptying out my pockets. I sat down, put my head down between my knees. They got Roberto, Jenny, the two girls. They all lined us up. And they went through our bags and opened the glove compartments and went through the van and took everything that they wanted. And as they're going through taking our things, I'm sitting there with my head down and I began to pray and I thought of a lot of things. And I knew that was going to be my last day on earth. I knew they didn't leave any witnesses, anybody that could talk. I knew it was just going to be a matter of minutes and they were going to put a bullet through each one of our heads and that was going to be the end of it and they were going to take the van and everything they wanted. And I started praying. I said, Lord, if there is anything in my heart that grieves you, if there is any sin in my life, please show me right now. I want to make sure one more time that I'm right with God. I can't even explain to you what it felt like. But it was like God stepped in the woods right there and put his hand on my head as I sat there. And I began to search my soul. And you know, there wasn't any regrets. There wasn't anything gnawing my conscience. There wasn't anything I wish I'd apologized for or taken care of before I left on the trip. My heart was clear with God. I was ready to die. I was ready to die. There's no feeling like knowing you're ready to go into eternity right with God. Can you say that this morning? Are you right with God? Are you ready to die? You have no idea when your time will be. And I thought for sure that was my night. As I sat there searching my heart, God began to feed me the Word of God. One of the first verses that ran through my mind was the verse he gave me when I was 13 when he called me to be a missionary. Yea, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. I clung to that promise with all the faith I had. And then he gave me parts of Psalms 23. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. And as those guys were going through our bags, and I was communing with God, I could see the spiritual table that he had prepared before me. There was a crown of life. My name was written in the Lamb's book of life. I had the assurance of salvation and peace in my heart. I was ready to go. And those were things those guys could never take away. They could never steal that. And I rejoiced in my heart. Matter of fact, I got a little excited. As I thought about heaven, I thought, you know, in just a few minutes, I'm going to see Jesus face to face. I'm going to walk streets of gold. Everything I've believed in and put my faith in will be sight. About that time, the driver stepped near me and he said, he handed me an iPad that I had in my bag, a little mini iPad. He had found some debit cards in my wallet. He said, I want the codes to all these. So I start trying to remember all the codes, and he's punching in his cell phone. And I start to witness to him. I said, buddy, I just want you to know something. I said, God loves you. He died on the cross for your sins, your life. You can have a changed life. You don't have to live this kind of way, doing this kind of stuff. I said, there's a better way, serving Jesus Christ. He looked at me. He hung on to every word I had to say. Matter of fact, he started speaking in broken English with me. That upset the other man who didn't understand what we were talking about, so we went back into Spanish. And he asked some questions, and I continued to witness to him. And then I started pleading with him. I said, please don't kill us. I said, you got it. I got two little boys back in Honduras. I couldn't even explain how it felt thinking that I would never see them again. I said, please have mercy on us. He looked at me and he said, you're a Christian, right? I said, absolutely. He said, you're still worldly minded. I said, what? He said, you're still worldly minded. You're afraid to die. You shouldn't be afraid to die. If I kill you, you gain everything. For you to die is gain. He starts preaching to me. He knew some Bible. I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. And I said, I am ready to die. You know, I didn't want to die. I didn't want to leave my family. And I said, I apologize for showing any fear. He patted me on the shoulder. He said, that's all right. I understand. He said, just do everything we tell you to do. He went back to the van and they finished gathering up all their stuff. And they pulled out my church shoes out of one of my bags and they took the shoestrings out. And I heard the one man say to the girls, you girls, get inside the van. Sit up inside the van. Jenny got her two little girls and they went and sat inside the van. They came to us guys and they said, you guys lay face down on the ground. Put your hands behind your back. I rolled over and they started tying us up with the shoestrings. I thought, oh man, this isn't good. They're going to kill us and they're going to take the van and the girls and who knows what's going to happen to them. And I leaned over my shoulder one more time and I begged that man. I said, please don't kill us. He didn't say much. He just finished tying us up. There we were, all tied up. One man grabbed a towel and threw it over top of Roberto's head. He couldn't see anything. He couldn't move. The other man grabbed a towel. He came over to me and he said, Eric, lift your head up. I lifted my head up and he slid the towel under and made a pillow for me. I thought, wow, that's a good sign. If he's worried about me being comfortable in this brush, surely that's a sign that he's not going to kill me. They went back to the van, grabbed their bags, pulled out their guns, and they said, all right, guys, we're going to leave. We're going to turn our backs. We're going to walk down this hill. And when we turn our backs to leave, you guys had better not do anything stupid. You need to wait a good hour before you leave. And when you do leave, you're going to pass a police station about a kilometer down the road. Don't you guys dare stop and report us. If you do, we'll hear about it, and we will track you down, and we will kill you. It's a long road home to Honduras. And they turned to leave, and that man stopped, and he looked back. He said, Eric, I like you. He said, I wish we could talk some more in a restaurant under other circumstances. I leaned over. I said, yeah. I said, thank you for not killing us. And they disappeared down over the hill. There was cars waiting for them. They all got in the cars. They were long gone. We were left laying there in the dark, in the silence of that woods. And my heart sounded like a big bass drum. Boom, 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 boom. It was surreal. I peeked around to see if anybody was watching. I reached back, and he barely even tied me. I popped the strings off. I untied Roberto. The girls were unharmed, still sitting in the van. And I tell you, folks, we had a... we had a revival service right there in the woods. Stuff was laying all over the place, things they didn't want. And we looked up in the starry Guatemalan sky and we thanked God. We thanked God for His mercy, for His protection. He's a mighty, mighty God. And I believe with all of my heart this morning that we are alive because people like you, churches like this, are praying for us every day, every day. We can't do it without prayer. We can't do it without God's help. And He's been there, and you've been there, and others have stood behind us in your prayers and support. And we want to say thank you so much for everything you do. Lord willing, next month, mid-September, we'll be heading back to start our next four-year term on the mission field. But before we do, in early September, we have a trip planned to Greece. Hannah talked a little bit about ministering to refugees there in Greece. They've come out of Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq. They're trying to get into Europe, cross the Mediterranean. And they got stuck at the Greek-Macedonian border when the United European Union closed down the borders. They've been living in tent cities, 15,000 just in one city. And Hannah had the privilege to go in March, and we'll be going again in September for about 10 days with a team of 9 people. And we plan to take in Arabic Bibles, literature, try to witness to Muslims. To Muslim. Isn't that exciting? You know, God loves Muslims. God loves everybody. He's died for everybody in this world. And we need to present the gospel to them. She told you about one man who came and asked how to become a Christian. She got to become friends with another Muslim lady while she was there. And before she left, she went to her tent and handed her an Arabic Bible. And she said, "I know you're a Muslim, but would you read this Bible?" That lady grabbed the Bible and tears began to stream down her face. She said, "You know, we are Muslims." She said, "We are fleeing Muslims. We're fleeing ISIS, who is a Muslim group. And they've killed our families. They've destroyed our homes. And we fled here to Greece. And you know, since we've arrived in Greece, the Christians have shown us more love and respect than our own Muslim brothers. Absolutely, I'll read the Bible." And she grabbed it and took it. Isn't that exciting? God is preparing a harvest in these last days, in these troublesome times. God is still working, and we want to be part of that harvest. Pray for our trip. September the 8th, we'll be leaving, coming back the 19th. And we need God's help that we can be a blessing to those people and to those families. And pray for our return. As you came through the doors for the service, you were handed prayer cards and pledge cards. Is there anybody that needs one? Just raise your hand and we'll get one to you. Anybody that needs a prayer card, use those cards. All right, there's one back here, Hannah. And put them on your refrigerator, put them in your Bible somewhere. When you have your devotions, you'll be reminded to pray for us and pray for us by name that God would help us and protect us. We are excited about what God is doing. It's exciting days that we're living in. And He's been supplying all of our needs. The white envelope that you were handed there with the pledge cards and prayer cards. We are raising funds for a vehicle. Our Toyota 4Runner that we've used for the last 9 years is coming down to its last leg. And we need to get something more dependable. So we're raising funds for that. If you'd like to help us on the car project, anything that goes in the white envelope will go specifically for that project. So pray about that. If you would like to be a financial supporter of our ministry on a monthly basis, sign the pledge card. Give us your name, information, email. And at the bottom, there's some boxes that you can check if you want to get email updates or newsletters. You can give us that information and sign the box at the bottom and hand them to us or put them in the offering at the end of the service. But we want to say thank you so much for all that you've done, for your prayers, your love, your friendship. And I hear that you're taking teams almost every year into Honduras. That's exciting. Keep minding God. Keep being a blessing. Hondurans and others around the world need Jesus. They need the gospel. And we have a great message to share. Let's do our part in sharing that. Thank you so much. May God bless you.